Okay, we are rolling.
Hey.
With no buzzy mic.
Yeah, apparently Jeff's mic somehow went... Well,
it's only...
What?
It's only how many years old.
Yeah. Well, mine's fine. Same age.
Yeah, I wonder which one... So, I'm using the third mic right now. I have a vague recollection that this is the third mic because we already retired it because it was acting up. But I'm not sure. And if that was the case, I also am not sure if it was your mic or my mic that we replaced it because... Oh, you know what? They sell... That's right. I was looking. It's kind of cheap electronics in here.
Uh-huh.
And they actually sell kits where you can replace this and turn it into a really freaking good microphone.
Oh, really?
Because the cardioid is a good piece of equipment, but this stuff in here is not good. So they actually sell kits to upgrade these mics to, you know, studio quality mics.
Well.
Well.
you're the tech guy.
Yeah, except who knows what's making this thing buzz.
Yeah. That is the question. So anyway, let's talk about some stuff. Now, this was from a couple weeks ago.
Talk about sex, baby. Let's talk about
We've talked about sex enough on this show. Did you see the thing about dumb Starbucks? I wanted to talk about this.
I did see the thing about dumb Starbucks.
That was so great. I mean, I don't know if you saw the first season of Nathan For You, which is Nathan Fielder's show. It's a hilarious concept and basically hilarious comedian who... His idea is he uses his business degree to help people make business decisions.
Okay.
The whole dumb Starbucks thing was he made a store called Dumb Starbucks just to get publicity with the idea that since we're calling it Dumb Starbucks, we're doing the absolute bare minimum necessary for parody. So we can use Starbucks as fair use.
It wasn't. I heard one story about it, and it sounded like he wasn't charging for coffee.
Yeah, because I think that they realized that if they did, then they would.
Right, but if it was just more of a piece of art, right?
Right.
I mean, it's parody. It's, you know, you're not running a business; you're losing money.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I heard about dumb Starbucks.
The reason why it got shut down was because they didn't have the health permits to sell food.
Okay.
But Starbucks was, I mean, Starbucks was in an interesting position because they couldn't just go and... They couldn't go and just try to shut them down. They'd look bad. It got too much press immediately. But they did put out a notice saying, like, we're looking into what we can do. We appreciate the humor, but we can't use our copyright like that.
There's another coffee roaster who makes a dark blend of coffee reminiscent of Starbucks roast. And he calls it Charbucks. And I know that there's been other trademark disputes with Starbucks, but, you know, this was the only one that's been, like, straight-up parody.
Yeah. It reminds me of an Audie Lang joke where he said, and I think I've said this on the show before, but I keep repeating it because it was such a great joke. Because they had somebody was doing – it was on the Stern show, and they were trying to talk about how they made the – they're making, like, a gay Broadway show or something like that. They're doing – a show, but they called it the gay version of the show, or whatever. and Artie Lang told a story about how there was a baseball team that they wanted to be they wanted to cash in on the Yankees name, but they were gay, and so they decided to call themselves the Gay Yankees. And the Yankees, you know, sued them and said you can't do that, and so they just decided to change their name to the Mets. Funny.
So they actually use the Starbucks logo and everything, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just the...
And like on the menu it just had like dumb venti and dumb...
Yeah. That's awesome. I wonder how the coffee was.
I heard it wasn't very good, but they had people standing in line for hours.
Well, for
free. To get a dumb Starbucks, you know, cup.
Well, yeah, if the cups were branded, you'd be worth getting it. Yeah. I wonder how...
I think the cups themselves were just cups with a sticker that said dumb. Okay. It wasn't like an actual...
Right. Let's see if there's any on eBay. You can talk while I'm searching my internet. It's kind of snow right now.
How about them bitcoins?
It'd suck if you had your bank account at Mt. Gox. Yeah, that would
certainly
sure.
suck. This gets to part of the problem I had with Bitcoin in general, which was it's not backed by anything. And there's no insurance for it, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, if you deposit something into a bank...
There's tons and tons of dumb Starbucks stuff on eBay. Tons. Some of these are probably the real cup, but there would be so much other stuff that people have just started making up.
Yeah. Anyway, so there, you know, you have FDIC backing your deposits in a bank. So if a bank goes insolvent, your money is still insured. Well, people lost thousands of bitcoins. They lost like 9% of bitcoins that were in circulation have been lost.
Lost or stolen?
Well, they technically don't know.
Okay.
But either lost or stolen. 9% of a deflationary currency is now essentially gone.
Right.
That's not good.
Yeah. I wonder how that plays. So, you know, I'm a supporter of the Bitcoin technology, right? And this wasn't a flaw in the Bitcoin.
Right. It was a flaw in the way the exchange was doing its transaction model.
Yeah, so Mt. Gox, you know, implements some bad code. But now 9% of Bitcoin's gone. And, you know, Bitcoin is a finite amount of currency.
Right.
There's only going to be N amount of Bitcoin discovered. And at that point, there'll be no more Bitcoin to be made. I wonder how they accounted for... loss of... No, that's 9% of today's mined Bitcoin, right?
Right.
I don't know what percent of that is of the total, right? But I wonder how they account for a significant loss of the pool of coin, you know?
Well, I mean, as far as I understand about Bitcoin, they don't. Once it's lost, it's lost. You can't fork the code of Bitcoin. That would ruin the whole point. Mm-hmm. There's no central authority. So,
right.
So what I've seen is actually people jumping on Dogecoin. It's not Dogecoin, it's Dogecoin.
Is it Dogecoin?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because Dogecoin is inflationary. It actually has a method in it for inflating. Mm-hmm. And even though Dogecoin was originally a joke, people are jumping on it because it's a better proof of concept than the Bitcoin. Really kind of weird.
Yeah, that's... I don't know much about Dogecoin. Other than it started out as a joke, and it was using... It uses the same crypto, right? Or
I think it uses a different crypto method. It's not the same kind...
It doesn't use the proof of work. It uses...
It's not the same kind of cryptological method. But all I know really about it is that it's inflationary. It started as a joke because you can make... Because there are ways to make, like... Somebody put out some thing for making any sort of coin you want to make.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody made the Dogecoin. And then people actually started to latch on to it. Because there is something fundamentally interesting and good about the concept. And that's the thing that sort of...
Now, what do you mean by it's inflationary and not deflationary? I'm not sure I understand what that... How it...
There's something about how over time, after a certain amount of coins are minted, like 5% more will then enter into the circulation.
Oh, okay.
And that will keep happening. I haven't looked into all the understanding of it, and it's something that I don't really have an understanding of. I mean, you know. My concentration is on things like particle physics. I'm not really a finance guy. So you could ask me about vacuum expectation values all you want, but I can't really explain these sorts of things. But it seems to me like a Doge coin, or at least something where there is an inflationary model, is better than a deflationary model for something like currency. I mean, if you're doing something like that is just a commodity, then that's different. Then deflation makes sense. But if you're doing something that has a currency and you want
to... Okay, so Dogecoin is actually based off a Litecoin, so it's a memory hard thing. So I don't know about the inflationary deflationary thing, but that there, it's you can't really parallelize mining like you can for Bitcoin because of how memory hard works. You can't pipeline it like you can cryptologic hashing, so cryptographic hashing. We talked about Litecoin before. I'm not sure if you recall about that. I was trying to explain memory hard, and you were pretty incredulous with how I was explaining it. So,
I've simmered down on that. There's a whole bunch of things that are shady about Bitcoin in general. A whole bunch of the initial batch of Bitcoins are just owned by whoever created Bitcoin, right? So they essentially have probably millions of Bitcoins. This Satoshi guy.
Right. And got lucky. Struck gold, right? I mean, he created a cryptocurrency that was up to $1,000 a coin.
And now...
We'll probably get back there.
It may get back there for the very few people who still stick this, but I think this was an existential crisis for Bitcoin. This really will affect how people will adopt it, because you have people who basically, I mean, the thing is, okay, why is fiat money valuable? The reason why American dollars are valuable is because the only way you can pay taxes, American taxes, is with American dollars. That's the only way. And the American economy is, you know, the most robust economy. American securities are the largest security. So that's why essentially fiat currency is valuable. Why is Bitcoin valuable? The only reason Bitcoin was valuable was because there were exchanges that made it valuable. Mm-hmm. And when exchange becomes, you know, drops off the face, when the largest exchange becomes insolvent, that really messes with the whole value.
Right.
So they're going
to
be.
How would you like to be the one of the CTO or whatever for Mt. Gox? Holy shit!
I don't know.
Yikes! All right, so that's we Bitcoined that one.
Yes. How about what's going on in Ukraine? Everyone thought that that World War III was going to be started in the Middle East. No, apparently it's going to be started over the Ukraine.
So, I haven't listened to any news today, but I saw a picture on Twitter about a Russian flag flying over some Ukrainian city or something. Yeah, because... But I didn't have time to look up the context, because today was Ali's birthday party, so...
Oh. So, the Ukraine is going through political upheaval right now, but the area, the Crimean area, which is near Russia and has lots of Russian supporters, now has Russian troops entering it.
Mm-hmm.
And the Russian parliament, what is that? Yeah, you hear that too, huh? Oh, you know what? That's probably a video on your computer.
Yeah, it's the
Dumb Starbucks
page is talking to me. It's IB Times, yeah.
Anyway, so now the Russian parliament has allowed, and Putin has granted them to put Russian troops in the Ukraine, and Obama and Putin just had a 90-minute conversation over the phone where Obama was saying, don't do this, and Putin saying, fuck you, and now troops are entering into the Ukraine.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
So, you know, Crimea, right, is... it was Russian until 1953 or something, and then Khrushchev, for some reason, they didn't really go into why, but Khrushchev reapportioned it as part of Ukraine in 1953. So, you know, there's a lot of ethnic Russians there. And it's a big mess, right? I mean, get half the population wants to go with Russia, half the population that wants to go with, you know, that wants to go with Ukraine. And, that usually doesn't work out so well.
No, that's the kind of thing that leads to, civil war. in civil wars, when you have a large country like Russia behind them, tend to go in that way.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not pleased. Anyway, two funny names that I heard.
Okay.
Juan Debonia.
Juan Debonia.
And Lou Skuntz.
Okay.
So there you go. I spend some time at night going on to these little these philosophy chat rooms just for fun.
Mm-hmm.
One of them posted some guy was posting this these pithy quotes, right?
Mm-hmm.
And one of the quotes that I took a very big issue with was, successful people are simply those with successful habits. These are meant to, I guess, get people mm-hmm. talking. But right. to me, that's a tautology.
Okay.
Right?
I'm not sure. Tautology?
Tautology means you're saying something, you're repeating something in the statement. It's essentially obvious. Successful people are simply those with successful habits. That's saying success is success. That's saying two equals two.
Right.
There's
right.
nothing.
Because you only know if you have a successful habit by being successful.
Right. You define successful in a way such that somebody who has successful habits is successful. So for somebody to say that successful people are simply those with successful habits is a ridiculous pablum. It's a total tautology that's meaningless. Somebody tried to argue with me. And said, hey, well, you know, habits aren't people. And I was like, well, rocks aren't numbers, but if I have two rocks, that's two rocks.
Mm-hmm.
My other example is, if I said rocks exhibiting signs of volcanic activity are simply those that underwent volcanic activity. Yeah, duh. So I thought that was, I thought I'd bring that up because that was like,
It's a motivational. I mean, if you're trying to get into the philosophy of it, you know, maybe you have more. But it's a motivational thing, right? Because I mean, you know, sitting around whacking off all day is not a successful habit.
Yeah, sure,
right.
Sure,
no. So you can get you thinking about what your habits are. I think that's the point
if
of that.
If I was in the pithy statements channel, then I wouldn't mind it so much.
Right,
but if I'm in the philosophy channel, I'm looking for something interesting
right,
to talk
right.
about. There's nothing interesting about that statement.
Right. I understand.
Yeah.
Yes, it's not philosophical at
yeah.
all.
This is interesting. I just talked about vacuum. I mentioned sort of what I was going to talk about. I think that you can make a mathematical model for quote-unquote heaven.
What's that?
So if you were to take the idea of heaven,
mm-hmm.
right, and sort of just take away the theological thing and just boil it down to what it would mean at its base level. It would be something where you, no matter what you pull out of it, what's there remains, right?
Okay.
You could essentially it's what we would call a condensate of goodness. It's just good. You could pull out good and the same amount remains. You can put good in, the same amount remains. Right.
Okay.
Sort of.
Okay.
It's essentially, it's that sort of thing. It's like an infinite. It's like a Hilbert Hotel, right? It's an infinity where mm-hmm. you pull out a whole bunch of rooms in a Hilbert Hotel. It doesn't matter. There's still an infinite number remaining. That is essentially mathematically what we call a vacuum expectation value or a condensate in physics. So the Higgs field is an example of a condensate of something called weak isospin, but that's not really necessary. But
okay.
if you had two electric plates, okay,
mm-hmm.
Somewhere out in the universe, so you had one electric plate on one side of the universe, another electric plate on the other side of the universe, and they were charged, then what we would notice is that, you know, we didn't know the plates were there, but we would notice that particles with a charge would tend to move in one direction, or they tend to move in another direction. And that would just be a universal mm-hmm. feature.
Right.
we would call that a vacuum expectation value of space, because we wouldn't know that those two plates were there.
Right.
We would simply say that that's a vacuum expectation value in space. Right. And that what that means is that there's all these photons that are going through, and every time a charged particle interacts with one, you know, it moves towards that charge. But you can take a charge in, you can put a charge out, whatever. It doesn't change the amount of charge that's in that field. That's a vacuum expectation value. That's heaven, right? I mean, that's plenty without there ever being any way of removing the plenty.
Okay. I'm not sure I got the final tie in there, but...
You can pull charges out.
Right, right.
Same amount of charges in there. You can put charges in, same amount of charges in there.
Okay.
I just think it sort of shows that those people who are looking forward to heaven as some sort of special thing. No, we can actually describe it. It's really not. It's really not all that special.
It's not a big family reunion in the sky.
It's just a condensate of charges.
Okay.
All right. Maybe that was a little too...
It's just not interesting to me, really.
That's okay. Doesn't have to be. As I'm learning more to do the math, I'm getting into things like vector spaces, which are really kind of interesting to me, because the idea is something like, we've talked about spin before, where in the analogy to spin is angular momentum, right? So a planet, for example, has an angular momentum. Our planet rotates.
Right.
And everything in quantum mechanics is quantized, but here's the thing. For our planet has angular momentum in 3D space, right?
Mm-hmm.
But an electron, for example, does not have angular momentum in 3D space because it doesn't have spatial component. It's a point particle, mm-hmm. essentially. It has an angular momentum in a vector space, which is not a real space.
Okay.
It's an additional degree of freedom. That's not a real space. Okay. Trying to imagine that blows your mind, because you can't. How can something have a movement in a space that is only mathematical and is not a real space?
I mean, I'm just thinking of, you know, some of the depictions of additional dimensions, right? Where it rolls up on, you know, a point rolls up on itself and stuff like that.
But this is not an additional spatial dimension.
Okay.
This is it can't be described as a spatial dimension. It doesn't work like that. It's something different. And the only way we can describe it is mathematically. So while you can imagine it as a sort of spatial dimension, mm-hmm. it doesn't work like that. You can only do math on it. You can't observe a vector space. But you can observe the outcome mm-hmm. of something in a vector space. That's sort of why quantum mechanics is so weird. It from everything that it appears to be, like, you can measure spin up and spin down, but it appears that the electron is in some sort of state where the spin could be anywhere, but as soon as you measure it, it's only in one, say, or the other state.
Mm-hmm.
But the spin could be pointing anywhere in that vector space until you measure. And that's the weird thing about quantum mechanics. You have this cacophony of, you have this infinite amount of states,
mm-hmm.
and when you measure it, it's one or two. So what's going on when it's that infinite amount of states? There's the Copenhagen interpretation, which says, it's in some sort of blob of states, and then you measure it, and it collapses. That doesn't make much sense. There's the many worlds interpretation, which says it's in this cacophony of states, and when you measure, one of these states becomes your universe, and the other states turn into other universes.
Mm-hmm.
That seems overly complicated. How do you explain this? No one knows. Right. You can do the math for it. But how do you measure a vector state when you can't actually measure a vector state? You can describe it mathematically, but you can't measure it.
Right. I don't know, because I don't know how to describe it mathematically, let alone measure it, so.
It's one of those things that really gets at you when you start to learn this stuff. You're like, wow, this is so interesting and fascinating, but there's something going on here that we don't understand, that we can do the math for, right? The whole shut up and calculate. Mm-hmm. But and the math is incredibly accurate, more accurate than any other understanding of things that we have. But from a philosophical standpoint, what is reality? What is actually going on? It seems to be like it works on a different set of rules.
Mm-hmm. I liked it when I had enough understanding of our quantum mechanical talks that I could contribute, but Greg has long left me in the dust on these.
Sorry. How about those Spike Lee gentrification things? Have you heard about that?
I have not heard about that.
So Spike Lee made started complaining about the gentrification of Brooklyn. Mm-hmm. Because when he grew up, it was not... Save some for me. I haven't even finished my first bit. Okay. when he was growing up in Brooklyn, it was a very, poor area. Mm-hmm. And there was lots of crime and stuff like that. But, he grew up there and it was a different way. And now it's hip and cool. Mm-hmm. And his parents own a brownstone there. And he had a big problem because at one point, apparently his mother and father are musicians and they, they play in their brownstone all the time. And I can understand him getting mad at this when somebody was apparently doing his mother or father was apparently just playing acoustically. And the person next door called the cops because it was too loud. I can understand why Spike Lee would get upset about that sort of thing. It's like, come on, he's been doing that for 50 years. Mm-hmm. Now you call the cops in 2014. But he did it in a really obnoxious way that got people kind of like, gentrification is good for this area. It's good for it's good for cities that gentrification occurs. I understand that there's a loss of some of the original culture around an area. And that's a problem, but cities eat culture. I know I talked about this before. That's how cities survive. Mm-hmm. Culture is how a city grows. And somebody came around and I guess just recently vandalized his parents' house, which is just the absolute wrong way to deal with this. I think gentrification is such a good thing for these areas. I mean, we when we were in New York, we went to Brooklyn. It was awesome. Mm-hmm. But you feel a little bit for the people who, grew up in that area and now could no longer live there or for whatever.
I mean, that's it. That's the flip side of the story.
Right.
I generally agree with you. I think it's better for the city, mm-hmm. And it's better for some, maybe many of the residents, but then there's the lower income residents who are going to get priced out of the neighborhood.
Right.
They have to find some other place to live, which is much further from where they work and where they, do things like that. So I hear about, you see that part too. I don't know. I'd have to look, I've never looked into it all that closely, right? Like to see, cause you would think if the neighborhood, gets gentrified, I guess it would be bad for renters, right?
Yes.
If you're renting, then you don't get any benefit to your neighborhood getting better. Your rent just goes up and you have to move out. So I guess that's where...
Now, if you own, then it's different. Yeah. But Spike Lee's parents own that brownstone.
Right.
Thing, if they wanted to move, but why would they want to move? They're, they're old people now. They shouldn't have to move. I don't know. I mean, I look at gentrification as generally a very good thing. But I recognize that there are problems in any... there's no perfect solutions to any problem. So I don't know what else to do with it. Well, I'm kind of done with my topics. How about you?
Stuff and stuff and stuff.
How was Allie's birthday party?
Allie's birthday was good. She's six, gonna be six in 2 days. Six in 2 days. Whole bunch of My Little Ponies, My Little Pony cake, My Little Pony napkins and plates.
Is there any cake left over?
I think there is some cake up there.
Yeah. I will have some cake. I haven't had cake in a long time.
It's good cake too. Good icing. What else did she get? She got stuff from the movie Frozen, which is her other big thing right now. I have an earworm from the one main song in Frozen right now. It's been playing through my head for the last 3 hours.
Don't infect me.
It's going through my head right now. It's like it's almost like there's a sound bed on the show.
A whole new Frozen world.
Let's let it go. Let it go.
Oh, yeah, let it go. Oh, let it go.
Anyway, pretty busy at work. Good busy, though. We're actually working towards moving some of our infrastructure to Google Apps for Business. And it's kind of getting to the point where, like, I can actually see the end of the road where I'm getting rid of, like, I'm not going to be in the email server business anymore, you know? Like, Google be in the email business. I don't want to be in the email business anymore. So, kind of excited about that, getting it all wrapped up. And,
doesn't that, though, leave you a little bit out of the loop in some ways? I mean, the security is now out of your hands. When something goes down, it's out of your hands. There's a level of when you put things into the cloud, there's a level of sort of trust that you're saying that, well, okay, they're going to take care of it.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of thing is sort of out of my hands.
Yeah, but with the amount of resources I have, there's more security. There's more uptime. There's more,
right.
You know, because not like I'm trading in a staff of five people who run email to go to Google.
Sure.
You know, it's one of 100 things that I need to take care of. So, you know.
Well, with you going to Google stuff, can you convince them to get Wave back?
Can I convince Google to get Wave back? No, that ship has sailed. Don't even get me started on fucking Wave. I want to talk about it so bad. No.
Go ahead.
Google Wave. If you've heard this before, skip ahead 25 minutes because that's probably how long I'll go on it. Google announced Google Wave a bunch of years ago now. And it was how the way they pitched it was we got in a room and said, you know, let's reinvent email.
Yeah.
Let's stop using this 30-year-old technology. What would email be if we invented it today? And what it was Wave. And what was in Wave is some of the things you'll see in their other products, but it's not all together, right?
It's not integrated.
You'll see some of the live collaboration that you get in Google Apps and Google Drive, like on Word Docs and things like that. The best part about Wave was it worked a lot like email. But so you have this long conversation of Greg and I going back and forth talking about a concept and we're developing a concept. And then, you know, all of a sudden, like, oh, we need to add more people to this idea. In email, you have to forward this whole long reply chain back and forth and it's hard to parse and all that. In Wave, you add someone to the Wave and it's almost like they've subscribed to a group, a distribution list, right? So then they can just go, or a forum, I guess, right? Now they're subscribed to like a forum post. So they can go to the forum page and they can redo the whole thing. They can even actually hit a replay button and they can watch how the conversation developed.
Right.
You know, and like, and it's multimedia thing. So there could be an email, and then a collaborative drawing, and then an email and a drawing. You know, it was so good, but it didn't make sense. They rolled it out for individuals, for personal use. In that kind of communication, I've never needed to do personally. We used Wave a couple times for preparing show notes, but at work, the way Wave worked, I would use it every day.
Yeah.
And then they canceled Wave. And but Wave was an open protocol, so there was starting to be third-party servers, you know, being developed. But when Google canceled Wave, people weren't going to invest a lot of time in this thing, which didn't have this huge push from Google. It died.
It wasn't Google Buzz. It was a good idea.
Yeah.
You know, now it looks like they're putting a lot of their attention to Google Plus, and Google Plus, I think actually, you know, as a Facebook ripoff, it's a terrible thing. But as a sort of new Skype, it actually works pretty well. You know, if people are doing these sort of hangouts and things like that. And so it's evolved into that sort of thing. It which is fine because Facebook is kind of flailing right now anyway. They spent $16 billion with a B dollars on that
WhatsApp. And like the WhatsApp users are running, rats off a ship. It's that's a lot of money, man. I thought when I heard $16 billion and the B was kind of indeterminate on the radio, I'm like, oh, that must be 16 million, no big deal. And I get to work and guy's like, 16 billion. I'm like, billion? I thought I heard million. Like, no, billion. What?
Well, they only wanted to spend $5 billion or maybe $3 billion on Snapchat or whatever it was. Wow. All you need is some dumb concept and get some people onto it. And
that was like
Facebook
not,
will come running. And
that was 9% of Facebook's. Maybe I got the 9% from your Bitcoin chat. What was the percentage? It might be 9. It was a significant amount of the company's total worth. I think it was like 40%, 30 to 40% of their cash and like 9% of the company's total value.
So they must be panicking at Facebook, right? Because they must be realizing, okay, the young people are sort of jumping off of Facebook in droves. The people who are embracing Facebook or still embracing Facebook are kind of people who are our age. Mm-hmm. And they're not really using it all that much anymore. So they need to – they have a lot of capital right now. How can we continue to grow? Mm-hmm. Well, this thing's growing. Let's spend enough money to capture that and see if we can
– It's an insane number of money.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I think this is probably the first time that I can imagine Facebook turning into MySpace.
Mm-hmm.
You know, up until now, I could have... I mean, I figured it won't be the dominant thing for 20 years.
Right.
But I figured it had 10 good years in it, or more, you know, 2 years ago, right? But now, I could see it in 5-6 years...
Well,
maybe not being as gone as MySpace is today, but...
I really think the huge problem with Facebook, the reason why I do not go anywhere near it, is because it's a very, very poor method of communicating. You know, it took me a while to get on the Twitter bandwagon. I readily admit, you know, I was very against it. It took me some time to see the light. Now I'm bullish on Twitter. I think Twitter is a great idea as long as you prune the list and what you're doing in a reasonable way. There's no way to do that in Facebook.
Yeah, I mean, my problem, the reason I'm not on Facebook much is it's just that. It's because the way Facebook is organized, there are...
Just the signal-to-noise ratio is ridiculous.
On Twitter, I have two kinds of people that I communicate with. I have friends and listeners.
Right.
On Facebook, there's friends, listeners, family, and schoolmates. And I don't know if it's because the family and the schoolmates take the average level of discourse and throw it in the toilet, or if the average level of discourse on Facebook, even if I had the same people in both networks, is just retarded on Facebook. But I mean, it's just nothing good is on Facebook. It's just, you know, I saw a joke a couple years ago and it's true. It's like, you know, in 3 years, Facebook's just going to be everyone sending the same picture back and forth.
Yeah. I mean, I think that some part of the problem is that Twitter's, you know, what was originally derided about Twitter, the 140 character thing, actually serves as a benefit to Twitter, because you can't get these long chains. I mean, the thing about with Facebook is that you have these situations where it's not just that you and your friends and your classmates and whatever. It also is your classmates' classmates and their friends and their acquaintances can then start communicating with stuff that you post, and they can post long diatribes and political mm-hmm. shit that you don't care about, and so it just becomes this ridiculous mess that is essentially uncontrollable. And while Twitter has that same idea that somebody can see any tweet and respond mm-hmm. to it, they can only respond to it with 140 characters, and you can ignore them very easily.
Yeah. I don't know why the content on both are so different. You know, when I go to Facebook, I expect to see 90% of shit I don't want to see.
Mm-hmm.
You know, neighbor doing something dumb with some one of their kids. You know, like not even dumb because I'm not invested in their children. It's just dumb.
Yeah,
it's just dumb. And you don't see that dumb stuff on Twitter for some reason.
Because we've taken that dumb stuff and said, okay, I'm not paying.
Speaking
attention
of Twitter, I really dislike how Twitter will throw promoted tweets on your feed if someone you follow is following the company that's paying for the promoted tweets. So Finch's Beer PA is following Range Resources. So I was getting the daily Range Resources is a great company saving the world and America's energy independence and. So I don't get that much value out of following Finch's Beer PA. You know, they aren't that active. I normally don't see their tweets. So I unfollowed them simply so I wouldn't see the Range Resources thing every day. You know, and it's like, and they won't let you block Range Resources.
Right.
You know, like you can block anyone else, but if someone's paying for promoted treat, you can't block it.
I understand. They have to make money somehow.
Yeah, but I don't know. It's kind of, I kind of find Range Resources an offensive company.
Yeah, I occasionally get, like, because I follow a lot of comedians, and sometimes they follow, like, some comedians will follow companies because they want to make fun of the mm-hmm. stuff that, like sometimes they'll get McDonald's promoted tweets because they follow, like, comedians follow McDonald's so they can make fun of if McDonald's says something stupid.
Yeah. I was following Southside neighborhood has a Twitter handle, and they were following McDonald's, and I was getting all the fucking McDonald's tweets, so I had to unfollow Southside Pittsburgh, you know? It's like, fuck.
I don't know. I use TweetDeck, and TweetDeck doesn't... I don't get the promoted tweets on TweetDeck.
Okay.
You know, I get them on the Twitter on the iPhone, but I don't get promoted tweets on TweetDeck, so use TweetDeck.
Well, that's always on my phone. I see them. I'm not sure... I'm never using a Twitter app on my computer and saying, there's another fucking promoted tweet. I'm not sure if they're even here. It's always on my phone that pisses me off.
Yeah, it only shows up on the phone.
Yeah, I don't think they show up on the desktop client, so I'm not going to switch back to TweetDeck. I'm pretty happy with the Twitter client.
TweetDeck's now owned by Twitter, so it's...
Yeah. I don't need a full screen of tweets anymore. I'm past that.
I like it because, like, I can separate the people I follow, and then, like, there's, like, I follow the writing staff of a couple shows, and I can see, you know, I can look at that if I care, or there's like a Channel 101 group, and you know, don't necessarily care about what's going on, but I can move over there and take a look and see if that's interesting.
Right.
And also there's now this activity thing where you can see what people you follow are doing, and occasionally you'll see something interesting there. Most of the time it's useless.
Right.
Occasionally you'll see something interesting there. So
I kind of, so there's a thing that's on the mobile app where when a bunch of your followers follow the same new person, send you a message saying, hey, Joe, Frank, Steve, and Jim are all following Bob. You know, because it's kind of a light, you know, because you can see, oh, they're all beer people, and, you know, the only thing I don't like about it, and I can probably fix this with 2 seconds effort, is it sends a push notification to my phone, right? So it goes, ba-ding! Like just like when you get a tweet, you grab your phone, it's like, oh, yeah, 5 people are following someone new.
That's easy to turn off.
Yeah, I just haven't turned that off yet. But I like the feature. I just don't like it dinging my phone.
The tweet that I put out, which I saw... and retweeted. going back to Bitcoin, which was somebody tweeted, why didn't they just call it, what's the stupid idiot who didn't call Bitcoin cash money? C-A-C-H-E.
Oh, okay.
All right. Show?
Yeah, let's do some beer drinking.
Sounds good to me.
And then the post show. Amazon Anonymous. Got to make more money to pay for those taxes.
Yeah.